Welcome back to Nursing Uncensored, everybody. This episode is coming to you with a very important disclaimer. Today, I'll be talking with Dorothy, friend and medical examiner investigator. You might remember her from a previous episode. We will be talking very frankly about death, crime scenes, autopsy, and bodily processes after death. These things can be upsetting or traumatic for some people. We ask that you listen with caution, as well as respect those around you who may be able to hear. We bring this discussion in the spirit of education and fascination for a profession that many people only see depicted in movies or crime shows. So yeah, listen with caution, but I think this is a really good discussion. So if you can hold on tight for a little bit, this is actually going to be a good one. So let's go.
I feel like people want to know more about your role as a PI. And I think that anything you feel comfortable with talking about, like you can talk about stuff that maybe you experienced a long time ago. I also would love you to draw from any experiences you've had, any jobs you've had, because I think that this is an important discussion. So not only are we like meeting the theme of Halloween, but also I think this is important to talk about. How often is it like acceptable to talk about end of life, dead bodies, stuff that people ordinarily think of as like morbid or creepy or stuff that they don't want to talk about? So I think we need to go there.
Yeah.
And I'll put a little disclaimer at the beginning of the episode of like, if you are creeped out by this stuff, just know we're talking about dead bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm like excited. So I'll describe this, I guess, generally, but I just had this case like a week ago where there was a guy that he was last seen on the 3rd of September, and we found him like the 21st, and he was in his apartment, and we think that he may have overdosed, but due to his GCOMP level, we're probably not going to get anything to scientifically conclude what happened, but it was like maggot mania.
So while I've never done this job or been in such a place, I've read there are actually two that I can think of, really good books that were written either by medical examiners themselves or MEIs. And so I think that you probably see stuff from like start to finish, from like hospital just died to like what you're describing, where it's like clear that nature has taken its course like quite some time ago. So not only do I want to talk about like your job and like what you do when you like arrive. So let's actually start, if you don't mind, let's back it up even a step before that. So like you get a phone call, like how does this begin? Like you get a call that you're like on call for like your shift, and then, you know, what happens? How do you get a case?
Yeah, absolutely. I can talk through the whole process, like,
cool.
Because there's so many different things. Like let's say we get a call and it's a hospital death. So I could walk through that process and a call for a scene death and how that's different and what I do differently there. Like, I guess my whole overall process is the same each time. It just, I kind of adjust to what environment I'm in.
Okay. Yeah. So, and in a hospital situation is when you might run into like me, for example,
right?
Even though it's been some time since I've run into you at work, but so I've experienced that from my end, but I'm definitely curious to hear your end of.
Okay. Well, hello everybody. So actually, like in our state, anyone can report a death. So our department has a pager that the county can use, like nurses at the hospital can use, anyone can use it. It's on our website to how to report a death. So let's first talk about hospital deaths, where I run into other nurses. And so a call comes in either from a nurse on the floor, you guys can report a death. I think at the university, they typically call it into the admission and transfer center.
Mm-hmm.
And then they call the hospital mortician.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hospital mortician calls usually the nurse on the floor. ask some screening questions because they kind of have an idea what we're looking for. So we're looking for anything non-natural. So, you know, what brought this person into the hospital? Did they have a fall with a fracture? Did they fall and they got a subdural and then they had surgery and then, you know, that didn't go as, I mean, their injury was too severe and they, you know, go to palliative care. We want to know about that because that fall, you know, could have contributed to the death. Or if someone, like, for instance, tries to kill them, like commit suicide, and they come into the hospital and they're able to be resuscitated for some time, but then they're not, you know, that's not going according to plan. We want to know about that. So the nurses call the admission transfer center, they call the mortician screens it, and then they call us if they think that it's a case for us. So the page comes in or I get a phone call. And so what I do is I go to my computer and I have access to medical records. I'm fortunate that's not always the case, but I can go in and kind of get a sense of what happened. And then if I have questions whether that incident contributed to death, I'll consult with the nurses, the treating physicians, and gather my information. So once I talk to them and I feel that it has contributed, or if I have a question about it, then I'm going to take all of that information and consult with a medical examiner. In my case, it will be a forensic pathologist. And then they're the ones that ultimately make the decision on cause and manner. So there's a lot of things that I automatically know are going to be a medical examiner case because per the code, it lays out like what's a required autopsy, what's a recommended autopsy. If there's any question, I'm just gonna treat it like it's a case.
Yeah. And from a nursing standpoint, like we kind of, even though we probably don't know all the subtleties of how it's categorized, like usually we're kind of like, oh, you know, don't alter that body because this is probably a medical examiner case, you know, whether it's like an assault or whatever the heck it may be. We kind of have an idea of when we need to be a little bit more proactive about interacting with you guys. So yeah, but continue.
Sure. So, and yeah, that's an important point to bring up. I mean, of course, you know, things happen and you have to do what you have to do to, you know, take care of that patient. But once they have died, yeah, go ahead and, I mean, follow your policy, but we prefer that you leave everything, any kind of interventions intact, if you can.
Yeah. So like we leave IVs in, we leave catheters, drains, like all that sort of thing. We kind of like leave untouched. In other words, we don't remove them. We don't take them out.
Exactly. So then I gather my information. I decide it's a case. I come to where the patient is. So whether that's still on the floor, and a lot of times I'll call and communicate with the nurse, like, hey, is that patient been sent down to the morgue or are they still up on the floor? So I'll come to where they are. And then if family is present, I'm going to interview the family. And that's to confirm demographic information. Also to find out about the patient's past medical history, because, you know, a lot of times families know stuff. They don't always communicate to the healthcare providers. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to them about that. And then I'll talk about the circumstances that led them into the hospital. So, you know, what happened to bring them into the hospital? And then if they're not there, I'll interview them at some point over the phone. So then I'll show up to the hospital. I'm going to take a series of standard photographs of any, we have a standard series, and then we also document like any injuries, and we also document any medical interventions. So typically we're pretty self-sufficient, but like if we have someone to help turn, that's always appreciated.
Which I've done before. I've helped like so that like back wounds or lacerations or whatever can be photographed. I've done that before.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so appreciated. But, you know, I always tell the nurse or the nursing assistant, you know, whoever's up there, you know, I'm a nurse too. I get it. You're busy. If you have time, that's great. If not, I can take care of this and then I'll communicate to you when I'm done. So mm-hmm. I'll go in and take my photos. Then depending on the type of case, so, you know, let's say it's a motor vehicle accident. If I haven't already contacted the law enforcement agency that investigated the crash, then I'm going to do that at that point. And then I will take all of my findings. I'll go back to my office and then I write up a report. So, you know, it's basically charting. Then I write a narrative and we have like a standard procedure for that. So it includes the past medical history, you know, whether the patient, did they drink? Did they smoke? Did they use illicit substances? If there's a question, like, you know, I always ask about if they have depression, and if they do have depression or any other diagnosis of mental illness, then I ask about, like, did they ever have any suicidal ideation or attempts? Because sometimes you find that out, like someone gets admitted to the hospital, you're not exactly sure why, you know, they may have tried to kill themselves and that might not be evident right away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I always ask about that. I ask if there's any recent falls or trauma, if they've had a history of altercations, did they get in a fight? Were they assaulted? I'm just trying to narrow in on a manner of death. And right. What happened?
Yeah.
Right. So, and the manners, I didn't talk about it this time, but I did on my last.
Yeah. So people can go back and listen to the other episode that we did, because you talk about manner versus cause and how that's not the same as like necessarily as what nursing is reporting as like a cause of death to like the, like I call the admission and transfer center. Like we're reporting that a little bit differently. So like we talked before, one point that we can revisit is that, so we'll put like cause of death was cardiac arrest.
Sure.
But like you brought up a very valid point. We all die of cardiac arrest, but what caused that arrest? Like what,
right.
Like at some point everyone's heart is going to stop. So that needs to go a little deeper from your perspective.
Exactly. Cause for me personally, I'm just trying to like figure out what I think it is. Then I report it to the doctor, the physician, and they are the ones that determine the cause and manner. But, so if I think it's accidental, I'll tell the doctor like, hey, this is what I think happened here. And then they make that determination because they also read all of the reports and all the records and the circumstances. So it's really a collaborative effort of healthcare providers, law enforcement, if they're involved, families, and then the MEIs.
So usually when you're thinking about things like autopsy and like reports and like compiling all of this information, have you been present before at the hospital for an autopsy?
I have.
Okay.
So I've
gone down to the Decedent Care Center, the DCC,
a number of times.
And so I've been down there plenty. I could find it in my sleep with the lights off, which would be creepier than it is with the lights on. But I've never, because I work night shift, there's never any staff present to actually do autopsies. So I've never seen that. But I took a class through the College of Social Work about death, and we had a physician come in and describe, you know, just by gesturing on a living human, like what he would do. But I've never seen one, and I'm fascinated. And maybe that's a little bit like blood and guts, like horror seeking, but we never did cadaver work when I was in school because I took anatomy in a different place. They didn't have a cadaver, but talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's almost Halloween, so we gotta get a little bit creepy.
Well, yeah. So I've been present during different parts of the autopsy. I've seen one complete autopsy when I first started as part of my training. The forensic pathologist does an external exam, and then they also take photographs, and then they systematically, you know, they make a Y incision in the chest, and then they systematically go through to try to determine all of the natural disease processes or, you know, traumatic injuries. And they systematically take out the organs and weigh them. And then they take samples like histology if they're trying to determine a specific process. Mm-hmm. And then the head is separate. And the one that I viewed was a chest and abdomen only. So I didn't get to see the head, but that's a different process, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then they make an incision, and then they look at the skull, and then they cut open the skull and look at the brain and weigh the brain and take samples of that as needed to help them determine the cause and manner. But it was, you know, being a nurse for a long time and then, you know, being in hospice and seeing people die, it definitely was an interesting learning experience to actually see a person with no organs. You know, they've already been taken out and weighed and everything. So that was kind of, I mean, that was kind of shocking to me at first, but very interesting, and just kind of seeing how everyone's anatomy differs a little bit.
Yeah. You have like a different process altogether if this happens, like say not in, you know, cause we sometimes in the hospital, like while death can be pretty messy, regardless of where it happens, we typically, it's a very controlled environment. We know they've died within like a small amount of time after, because we're checking on them frequently, but it's different when it's in the community. So right. You probably have seen some, and I have lots of questions about this, but I'd also like you to kind of walk through the process of like what happens when we don't have like the organization and timing of hospitals or long-term care facilities that, you know, that haven't, sure. It hasn't been days and days.
Sure. So like, I'll walk you through like a scene death and like in the community, like in the home maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, basically we go to wherever the patient is, but let's say someone, you know, lives alone and they died in their home, and, you know, family, friends, they don't show up for work. So someone is concerned and they can't get a hold of them. So usually what happens is that they call, you know, they might call the police station, they might call 911 to do what's called a welfare check. And then usually law enforcement responds and enters. If they find the person in an obvious state of death, they'll automatically call us. But obviously if someone's still alive, they're going to call for an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say, you know, the person's deceased, so they're going to call me. I will get as much information as I can before I leave my office. So if they know a name, I'll get that, and I'll do like a quick scan to see if I can see anything in the medical records that might give me a clue of where to begin. And then, like if I can get information, great. If not, I mean, sometimes they don't know who it is. I just respond. So then I will bring our transport vehicle, which includes a cot. Our vehicle is filled with lots of personal protective equipment. I will drive to where that person is. And then as soon as I get there, I like to meet with a responding law enforcement officer. And then we kind of talk about the circumstances. You know, sometimes family and friends are present, sometimes not, you know, but how did we get notified that this person was missing, and kind of what are those circumstances? So I'll talk to law enforcement when I first get there. Law enforcement is always, I would say pretty much always there prior to my arrival. Mm-hmm. And then if there's family or friends or neighbors, you know, whoever's present that knew this person, I'll talk to them and do my standard interview. Like, when's the last time you've seen this person? How have they been feeling the last time you saw them? You know, to try to pinpoint the last time they were spoken with or seen. If the scene requires like a detective or an investigator, the responding officer will usually call them in advance. So if the detective, we don't always have detectives that come, but if it's a scene that warrants a detective, I'll wait for them. And then we'll do a joint, it's called a joint scene investigation together. because the medical examiner has jurisdiction over the decedent, but law enforcement has jurisdiction over the scene. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to disturb anything in the scene without law enforcement, you know, being there to, they're seeing what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of, I like to do a walkthrough first just to kind of get the lay of the land and kind of observe what, you know, what I can figure out from what I see. Mm-hmm. And then I'll
so,
take
like what? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Yeah, but
no.
So I'm wondering about the, so like, are you looking at like, is the whole house, does it look like it's been ransacked? Does it look like it's in ill repair? Does it look like, so basically you're looking at like what their life circumstances were kind of before they passed away?
Absolutely. Also important is like, did they have to force entry? Like, was the person in a locked residence or was their door broken down? You know, was there any signs of break-in? But yet lock, like seeing if the residence is secured, I always want to know that because, you know, if it wasn't secured, anybody could have been in and out theoretically.
Right.
So yeah, and I'm looking for any signs of a struggle, or if I'm able to know who the decedent is and I look up their medical history, I don't want to get a false sense of what I'm going into, like, oh, well, they had coronary artery disease and hypertension and they had a stroke last year. I don't want to automatically assume it's a natural death. So what I try to do is think of everything as a homicide until I can rule it out. So I'm looking for, you know, is there, yeah, like signs of a struggle? Is there any trauma on the body? Is there, you know, a suicide note? Is there a bottle of pills, you know, that's empty near the decedent? Obviously, if someone, you know, uses a gun, that's going to be obvious what happened. Either someone shot them or they shot themselves.
Right.
So, but that's an important part to figure out whether...
I mean, we can't overlook the obvious here. Like, right. We need to take in every detail when, you know, I say we, I mean you, this role that I'm imagining myself in right now.
Well, no, I mean, I'm taking you with me through it. So
Yeah, we're all going together.
Yeah, and I always ask law enforcement too, you know, like, what's your take on this? What's your opinion? Because it's, a collegial effort, and we're working together to try to figure out what happened to this person. So, like, yeah, if it's not obvious, it's like, I mean, I always ask them anyway, but especially if it's, you know, what's your perspective? Is this person known to law enforcement? That's another thing that might be helpful. You know, are you familiar with them? Have you responded to a lot of medical calls? Like, maybe they had a lot of, you know, natural disease processes and they needed, you know, to be transported to the hospital frequently. And then, I mean, I'm just searching for, you know, just the history of this person and, you know, who last saw them, how were they feeling then, you know?
So it's very much like reverse engineering their like last days or hours or
whatever. Exactly.
So, exactly. It is kind of like, you know, we see a lot of people, especially, you know, even me, like the context of what we know about death investigation is from TV and movies.
Right.
And a lot of that is dramatized and is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, at the same time, you're very carefully, and I think it's important. I think this is interesting because even though you've said before, you don't have to be a nurse
right, to
be in this role, but your ability to assess the situation for safety, detail, things that don't seem quite right, like nurses are keen on this shit because we notice that, oh, you're a little bit more swollen today. Like all these subtleties that are really a big deal. And so I think it's interesting, you know, that you as a nurse, I mean, it makes sense that you're good at it because you can take appreciation for like, oh, I can't disrupt this because this might be something important in this person's story.
Right.
So essentially like you're telling the stories of the deceased, not only in trying to help figure out what killed them, or what was their, you know, what their cause of death was, but you're also maybe giving family some sense of closure as well, I imagine.
Sure. Absolutely. And so, you know, if it's something where the cause and manner are not obvious, well, that's going to be an autopsy because that, well, that's part of the code. So one of the stipulations in the code states that if the cause and manner of death are in question. So if I'm not sure after I've done all my interviews, I also go through and take a systematic series of photographs of the outside of the residence or wherever they are from different angles. I go systematically through the residence and ultimately leading up to where that person is. And then the room that they're in, I photograph everything. Law enforcement generally doesn't touch anything until we get there. They don't disturb the body if they can. Sometimes if that person is in water or if there is a firearm present, they may have to make the scene safe, like you were talking about.
Right.
And also things like carbon monoxide poisoning, the, you know, firefighters will be there and they can determine if it's safe for us to even go in.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's scenes that I've been to and I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe we should have this checked out before we even go in.
Yeah. Are you by yourself sometimes or do you ride with somebody else?
Typically we're alone. But sometimes it works out. Right now, you know, if someone's training, they'll go with you and that's a huge help and that's how they learn too.
Sure.
But yeah, typically we're on call alone. And so yep, it's just you. But
so then, sorry, I wanted to, I keep pulling you off track, but
oh, no, that's
all of this is so interesting. So then if this person at the scene, then if it's determined that they need an autopsy, like you've done all of your photographing, you've collected all of the information you can get from the scene. You said, is it the fire department that then would transport a body? And how does the level of decomposition like affect your ability to do that? Like,
because well, that's interesting. So actually we transport the body. So, you know, we have body bags, we have a cart and then a vehicle that we transport ourselves. So, I mean, obviously law enforcement, firefighters help us greatly, especially if we're in a, you know, a tight situation where, you know, there's no way that me and a officer can get this person out by ourselves. So yeah, like if once we've done our investigation and we're ready to transport, I have called the firefighters to come and assist, especially with decomp. But it just kind of depends on where the person is, like how easy is it for me to maneuver this person without injury to anyone.
Right. Like, are they in a small space? Are they in an odd position? Like, are they in a bathtub? Like, are they?
Right. Or are they suspended, like fully suspended from a hanging?
Oh yeah. I didn't even think of that. So have you responded to hangings before?
I have. Never a fully suspended individual, but okay. A partially suspended one. So yeah, that's interesting because, you know, I mean, another important aspect that I'm forgetting to mention is that I typically call the medical examiner as soon as I have as much information, like, I mean, as soon as possible once I'm on the scene.
Sure.
If it's within reason.
Like not necessarily at 3:30 in the morning, but maybe you can call it like 5, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, we can call anytime, day or night. It just, like, if it's a natural death and I'm not concerned of anything suspicious, you know, I'll go ahead and release the person to the funeral home and then tell the funeral home, you know, hey, don't start any final disposition until you hear from us in the morning, mm-hmm. you know, because then I'll go back and type up my report and email it to the doctors. But, you know, like, I've been in some situations where I'm not quite sure. And so I'm going to call the doctor, especially if it's like a homicide, a child death, you know, something like, hey, you need to be aware that this is happening.
Yeah.
Or if someone is in an advanced state of decomposition, you know, hey, this is what I'm finding. I'm afraid to move this person just for, you know, I don't want to I mean, I don't know how to say that. I don't want to be insensitive.
No, I understand. Yeah. So, I mean, really there are challenges depending on how decomposed the body is.
Absolutely.
And so a lot, and you know, this is something else that I want to talk about after we finish talking about this is that,
yeah.
As Americans, we do have to be careful about how we talk about this, because not only do people, like, you know, have legitimate traumas surrounding death and
Absolutely.
Bodies, but also just as a culture, we're generally like, you know, we love zombie movies, but we don't necessarily want to see like our dead family member in a horrible situation.
Absolutely. So,
but it's also interesting because like it is a fact of our existence that after a certain period of time, we start to liquefy, for lack of a more sensitive way to put it. But I mean, this is a reality. Like we all are born from an egg and we all die by decomposing. So
absolutely. Absolutely. You go back to the earth, you know, and nature takes its course.
Right. Even if you're not necessarily outside in the earth, but
exactly.
it happens even if you're like in your home or
exactly.
at the scene of a crime. So yes, we can be sensitive about it, but also there's some level of like, this is just what happens.
You absolutely.
Know?
I obviously work in this industry. So you know, I'm used to it. And I mean, like I said before, you really have to have a strong sense of, you know, like life and death, and like be okay with the fact that you're going to die someday. I think that's a topic for a whole nother episode. But
yeah,
I just think as Americans, we're not, a lot of us aren't comfortable with death, even though it happens to us all. So, I mean, we need to do more education, I think, and, you know, talk about what the process is. Mm-hmm. So maybe that will make it less scary to people. And you know, one major part of my job is just having sensitivity and empathy. And I mean, it's the worst day of those people's lives.
Right.
And right. So, yeah, you have to definitely have sensitivities to that. And then also, you know, being honest about a lot of people with their, I mean, I'm the same way with, you know, my loved ones. They've had some traumatic accident or something that has befallen them and they still want to view them. It's really important, especially, you know, if they want to view them, what that's going to look like. So I'm very honest with them. And I usually preface it like, you know, hey, I'm really sorry to have to tell you this, but if that's something that you want to do, I have to tell you that, you know, these interventions are going to be present, or this is what you're going to see when you go in there. And, you know, is that something that you still feel comfortable with? Or a lot of times if a person is not in an advanced state of decomposition, you know, maybe a funeral home might be the better place once mm-hmm. they have taken their interventions to view them and spend time with them. But I would never take that away from someone that wanted to view them. However, I want them to know exactly what they're going to be looking at.
Right. You don't want them to be completely knocked off their feet. Because they didn't, because they don't realize necessarily what's happened. So,
right. Frank, like there is blood, there's going to be a lot of blood. Like, let's say there's going to be blood around their head. They're going to have a tube sticking out of their mouth. They're going to have lots of different tubes. Unfortunately, I can't move any of that.
Right.
You know, I mean, you do the best that you can, but
you still also can say like, if you're uncomfortable with this, like you will
right.
have an opportunity to see them in a better state.
Well, after. I don't promise that, because that's not
always. Oh, true. Because yeah. it all depends, because you don't know whether or not that could be potentially corrected. I see.
Yeah. And I think most people are just grateful that you're honest with them and they'll make the decision whether or not that is how they want to see their loved one. But a lot of people, after I've told them what that's going to look like, they're like, I don't want to see them like that. But yeah. You know, some people do. And I mean, whatever they want to do, I fully support that, but I just want them to not go in unaware, if that makes sense.
It does. It absolutely does. And I think that's important, because again, like to us, we can think of this, you know, this is our job. We are scientists. We see things in terms of like, even though we see these as people, it's different when it's your loved one. And right. So I think those warnings are important, that kind of like, I want you to have choice, but I also want you to know what, the, like have educated consent, basically informed exactly. consent. That's what right. I'm looking for.
Absolutely.
So in terms of your involvement, like you said that you have like personal protective equipment, like mm-hmm. do you have any kind of like respiratory filters, you know, because there yes. there can be odor involved depending, you know, especially if there's like water involved, or like, again, we're getting into the basic rules of human flesh and the environmental forces around it.
Yeah, sometimes there can be mold or fungus.
You were saying at the beginning, you were saying maggots can be yeah. present as well. So not my favorite thing. I can't say that it's many people's favorite thing. but I mean, yeah, we are organic material.
Exactly.
We are carbon-based beings. So yeah, so what are some things you do to protect yourself and to make it less unpleasant?
Well, we have these plastic type material, personal protective gowns. Like if it's, you know, if there's a lot of blood or a lot of fluids or a lot of decomp, if there's a lot of decomp, I'm probably going to wear a full body Tyvek suit.
Like a hazmat suit for those of us who watch movies.
Like. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and not like the, you know, scuba respirator.
Right, right.
Like we have the N95 mask, and then we have a more advanced respirator that we can use too if needed. I usually just wear the N95 mask because I get too hot and cloud up my other respirator.
Do you ever employ like those old nursing tricks, like putting something scented chapstick or something under your nose? Have you ever done anything like that?
Well, I have when I worked in the operating room, but not at this job because, well, so a lot of people think that Vicks VapoRub is going to help.
No, it just yeah. makes all the putrefaction smell minty.
Exactly, because it opens up your airways.
Yeah. And so you're gonna get more of that. No, you want something else.
We do have this kind of, I think it's like Vaseline. It's some kind of Vaseline-based scented stuff that I've given to law enforcement officers, but I just don't use it because I'm...
you're a nurse, so you're tough.
Right, and it's just like, we smell all sorts of things.
Like,
and
after you've taken care of a GI bleed patient for three right. weeks in a row, you're like... or, like, your patient with, like, Fournier's gangrene of the genitalia, and you're gosh. Like, I've already seared my sense of smell like right out of my head. Like it's just right. burned right out.
And then you go home and it's still with you. I mean, it's the
same. Yeah. Oh,
it's the same.
So yeah.
But I don't do any of that. I've heard lavender helps or peppermint.
Mm-hmm. Peppermint. I also have had people say that like that funky smell that you get from like autoclave mm-hmm. smell, like sterilization smell, that also is like spearmint or peppermint is like the best. So that's a pro tip for all the students out there. Like get a little bit of spearmint, like essential oil, and keep it in your pocket.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I know in the operating room we've used peppermint and benzoin. Mm-hmm. Even though I hate the smell, I'd rather smell rotten guts than benzoin. And
yeah, basically, like you're like this will at least go away when I'm done. This right. will linger with me for a while.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then I imagine you also probably work with like cleanup crews in the area that are like I on Instagram follow some, like, people are going to think it's weird, but I follow like some crime scene cleaners because I find it fascinating. And I know there are movies about it, like, but this is an industry, and I imagine you probably work with services, or at least you communicate probably with services similar to this.
Yeah. So I carry a list, you know, since I'm employed by the county, I can't recommend one service over another. So we have like a list of services in the Midwest, and some are local, some are, you know, state, like in the state, some are in neighboring states. But if that is necessary, then I will give that to the family or the landlord, the homeowner, just as a courtesy, so they can contact them. But I don't typically work with them because my my focus is on the mm-hmm. decedent. So once mm-hmm. I take them to, so let's say I'm going to transport the decedent. So if they're going to have an autopsy, I'm going to take them with me. I'm going to take them to the decedent care center. And then I will, a lot of times I'll take some additional photographs when I get back there, just in case, like I'm always paranoid I'm going to miss something. So I just kind of redo some photos and then I will place them in the cooler and then do all my paperwork and permits and everything and get that to the decedent care center staff and then let the doctor know, you know, what's going on. I mean, they're already going to know, but I'll send them an email saying, you know, here's my report. And then I'll also contact, if, you know, law enforcement, like if there's a detective or if it's, you know, if law enforcement is invested in what the autopsy outcome is, I'll communicate, they can always come to what's called the autopsy conference. And that usually occurs, I usually work night, so the autopsy would probably be the next day and conferences every day at a certain time. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let them know when that is. And then I'm going to get information from law enforcement, like photographs, reports, like their report, or if it's like a motor vehicle crash, I'm going to get their crash report, anything from the scene. If I didn't respond to the scene, and even if I did, we're going to share information.
All that documentation. Yeah.
Right. So it's a lot of paperwork after you respond. Well, I mean, in any job, you're going to have a lot of paperwork, but
especially medical related right. stuff, endless, yes. endless amounts of basically you still chart. You're not charting as a nurse, but you're still charting.
Exactly. It's a lot of charting.
And details are so important. Like we said, like you can't just be like, they look like this. And
right.
It's like you're having to put the time into this.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you know, I'm looking for scientific evidence and I have to be able to back that up somehow. So like not only in my report, but like in photographs. And also, you know, I'm going to order any records. So if they went to another facility before they came to the university, I'm going to order those records. I'm going to order primary care physician records, you know, anything that can help the doctor determine the cause and manner
right.
I'm going to get for them.
Wow. That's a lot, but it all makes perfect sense when we come across someone that may have had questionable circumstances. From my perspective, you know, as a nurse, like if I know that this patient, I'm either told they're going to be a medical examiner case, or I kind of know because I know there might've been some fishy circumstances or like it trips me to think that, you know, this might be something that the medical examiner might be involved in.
So
when you guys show up, I try to make myself ready, especially since I'm on night shift and this is usually happening in the middle of the night when
most
people are asleep. I hope not usually, but
not
maybe.
Us.
Yeah, no. But like, because I do palliative care, I see more patients die than your normal like med surg nurse. Maybe ICU nurses also see a lot of patients, you know, end up, you know, not surviving whatever it is. But most people in the hospital, like, I don't alter the body, but I do kind of clean things up. Like, for example, if they had a wound that was somehow related, like they fell, they had a wound, they, you know, whatever.
I don't want you to clean it up.
No, I don't mean clean it up. But like, for example, like if they're on a chucks and
sure.
that and chucks like, yeah, is like disgusting, sure. then I'll change that out, but I'm not going to like alter the body. But
sure.
for your sake, I don't, you know, some people also some certain diagnoses, like for example, people who have liver failure,
uh-huh.
I find those people can be a challenge to keep clean and not terrify families with
sure.
what the human body decides to do after
Absolutely.
A liver related death. It's pretty disgusting. I think it's one of the worst. I think personally, it's one of the worst ways to go. And so I don't wish that upon anybody. But less in the realm of disgusting and more, you know, Halloween is coming. So I have to ask, have you had any kind of like supernatural, and I don't know if you believe in that sort of thing or like if this is all just like, you know, science, but you know, some people in the hospital say they've had creepy experiences or, like, for lack of a better term, little ghost stories. So do you, have you had any experiences like that where you're like, that was kind of weird?
Well, I mean, I'm a fun killer because, yeah, I'm all about science, but yeah. I have had creepy, you know, like you were saying in the morgue, a lot of times you are by yourself because you and I both work nights. So if I am coming over to photograph a decedent or if I am bringing someone into the morgue, especially like, you know, I still have to roll them. Mm-hmm. So like, we have a whole system to do it if we're by ourselves, and we can always call safety and security for assistance if there's no one there. But you know, when you do roll a person and sometimes air escapes, mm-hmm. and you know, it's, you're by yourself and it's like, oh my God, did they just take a breath?
You know, actually, like, this is, you know, I'll be very open about this, but I took care of a patient who, when she passed away, her head of bed was at about, I'd say like 20, 25 degrees. You know, she was resting comfortably. Uh-huh. Well, after her family left, I went to flatten the bed so that I could prepare her for a body bag. Uh-huh. And as I laid her down, air that had been trapped in her lungs escaped. Uh-huh. And she went, And I've seen this happen before, so it didn't scare me, uh-huh. But this is something that happens. And
And
if a family member is present, you have to explain to them what is happening.
Right.
Because I've seen some people become quite terrified, you know, at seeing something like that or hearing something like that. So
sure, absolutely. Or they're convinced that they're not deceased.
That they're not dead. That's correct. Yeah. And it's like, well, I mean, you know, our vocal cords work by having vibration through air passing over them. And so, yeah, that does happen. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, but one thing that I can, this is kind of creepy, but it's true. Just know that there is a person out there decomposing right now that is waiting to be discovered. Mm-hmm. It's just fact.
It is. And, and I do want to say, like, okay, so, you know, even though we are being, I think we're being respectful, you know, I think we're, but I think that if people want to really know about, you know, specific stories, the two books, you might hear me typing for a second. Because there are two books that I read a while ago. I actually want to reread them because I read them pretty quickly and I want to read them again. But one of them is called Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. And it's by Mary Roach. And she talks about more specifics, like the cases that she's come across, what her process is, how she dealt with seeing this stuff, because this can be, even if you're a nurse and you're used to seeing this stuff, we still can experience trauma.
Absolutely.
From these sorts of things. And so I think that, you know, it's important that we also recognize that even though there are probably a lot of people that are going to listen to this episode that are like, this is interesting, like I'm fascinated by it, like this doesn't scare me, but also like I'm sure that you know, there are people that maybe want to consider this line of work and want to know really what it's like. And these books talk about like how to deal with seeing this day in and day out as your job.
Right.
The other book is called, sorry, I had a little burp there because I have a beverage. I have an adult beverage.
I do too.
Cheers. But the other book is called Working Stiff, 2 Years, 206 Bodies, and the Making of a Medical Examiner. And that is written by Judy Melnick. She's a doctor, and TJ Mitchell. So those are two that, you know, I'm not affiliated with them in any way. Those just happen to be books that I have either read or, you know, I want to reread both of them. So yeah, I think that those go into like specific.
I'm going to look up, there is, I can't remember the name, but there is a documentary. Those are two great books, by the way, that you mentioned. But there is a documentary on Amazon, I believe, about Francis Glessner, who was this fascinated woman. I can't remember her whole story. Just Google Frances Glessner and miniatures. And she, like, I think it was back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, was fascinated by solving crimes. And she did a lot for like forensics. And she built these, have you heard of her?
No, I'm very interested though.
She built these little miniatures of crime scenes, and like go on the internet right now and Google it. But she built a series of crime scenes that are actually still used in training in forensics today. And I believe that they are kept at the Baltimore Medical Examiner Department, if I remember correctly. But
she looks like somebody's grandma. Like, she's this sweet little looking old lady making these little miniature scenes.
Yeah, and she was like super feminist, so of course, like, she's my idol there. But she was basically came from a family of means and wanted to like go into like this kind of field, and was basically told that, you know, she can't because she's a woman. And she wound up, you know, bucking that and
I'm doing exactly what I want.
Right, exactly. And yeah, I've been meaning to order a book about her that I've had saw on the internet, but I think
Googled her while you were talking, and like, they're seriously like, these are like, if you're into like creepy murdery stuff, like, these are pretty great. Like, these are, imagine a dollhouse but like with a dead body in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, wow. And the thing, I mean, that's, if you want to know kind of what I do, I mean, obviously not all, most death scenes are not, you know, I mean, I do a lot of natural deaths, but mm-hmm. For where we live, but, you know, the idea behind those miniatures is that she creates a scene and then you have to investigate, like, what do you think happened here? I mean, because she puts a lot of different things in there, like you would find at a normal scene, like, hey, did you see this thing that, you know, is very, you might think benign, but it turns out it might not be benign.
Yeah, and she kind of, now that I look at other pictures of her, I'm like, she kind of looks like Emma Goldman.
yeah, she does.
Yeah.
So check her out.
So yeah, Frances Glessner, listeners can totally check that out.
And the one thing I was going to say is the documentary on Amazon Prime, I believe, it's narrated by John Waters, which is also really cool.
That is fantastic. I want to see it now just because of that.
Yes. It was very, very entertaining. Yeah. So those are all great resources. My mind is blank right now, but.
That's all right. Like, I think this is just a profession that people don't know a lot about, and it is really important work. Yeah. So then.
But also, I have the whole night if you'd like.
Same. So I want to kind of like call that an episode, because that's like great information. Okay. Right there. So that can be like one thing that we talk about. I would love to then also talk about a little, maybe a little bit more delicate, less in the like Halloween, like, ooh, have you seen dead bodies? But right. More so like the continuing, I think, talking about death. I think it's a good opportunity for that, because I feel that people are a little bit more open to it, because we are having like the Day of the Dead is coming up for those that are part of that culture. And like, mm-hmm. you know, the thought of, you know, a lot of people think that like Halloween is when like the veil between the living and the dead is the thin, you know, all that stuff that you hear as a kid. And right. So I think talking about death doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, sensationalized or creepy, but I think it's an important time to talk about that, because I think people are more open to it than, say, at Christmas or in June, right. Labor Day, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I would love to talk a little bit more about your experiences in hospice, specifically like, okay, so here's where I'm going with this. Bear with me, listeners too, bear with me. There was a book that I read. Like I said, I took this death and dying course through the College of Social Work. It was part of my aging studies minor, and it was a fascinating class. We talked about all sorts of topics surrounding death. And one of the things that we talked about was hospice care, and how important it is that we like talk about these things and be involved and like how people have different like kind of responses to hospice. But I think that it's important that we talk about end of life care anytime we have an opportunity. And I know that you have worked, you know, in many settings, but you also worked, correct? Did you? You worked hospice, right?
Yeah. For a little over 2 years, right? Actually, that's how I found out about the medical examiner investigator job.
Yeah.
Is through hospice.
Interesting. Yeah. So, and I work palliative care. So I do end of life care for those. Some of those folks are also under the care of hospice and come to us for like a little bit more intensive symptom management.
Sure.
And sometimes these are people that, you know, decide to change their course of action, you know, from whatever their illness or injury is. Maybe they realize that they're less likely to have curative treatment work, mm-hmm. and they want to go to what we call comfort treatment. It's not, and I will say this at the head of things, I hate the phrase, and a lot of providers do, I hate the phrase withdrawal of care.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like, you know,
we don't care anymore.
Right. Yeah. The care is done. We are not caring anymore.
Right.
But we talk a lot, like the phrase that you hear thrown around my unit during report a lot is goals of care.
Yep.
So there's always going to be care. Even after you're dead, we do
care.
And so I think that, so I want to talk about these things. I want to talk about like, it's not withdrawal of care. And then I'd also like to talk about the difference between palliative and hospice.
Yeah.
And then maybe some of our experiences that, you know, we have been most influenced by, because I've had some, you know, families or patients that I've taken care of that have made quite an impact on me and have affected the way I provide care. But what I was going to say is at the head of this, because my thoughts are all over the place now, because I'm so excited to talk about this. I've been wanting to talk to you about this, but I read a book during this class and I can't remember the title of it, but it talked about how there's this phenomena among humans where nurses who work among the dying a lot hear people say a lot of the same things or do a lot of the same things. And so this book talks about in categories, like for example, there is a phenomena where nurses will see right before a patient dies, they become really concerned with like their shoes or where's my suitcase, or like they start talking about travel or I gotta go, like they start saying things like that, and then no mom, it's okay, like we're in the hospital, like, you know, we're gonna stay here, and then all of a sudden, you know, they've died. And right. So I think there are a lot of patterns, and so I want to talk about whether or not, you know, we've seen kind of patterns about, you know, like people right before they die. So,
right.
But I do want to pause for just a second because I do want to refresh my drink. So,
okay. I will go do the same.
Do your thing. I'll meet you back here in like five or less. Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Bye.
Here at Nursing Uncensored, we may be, well, uncensored, but we're not unfiltered. Protected health information has been changed and concealed to comply with HIPAA. The things we talk about are from years of experience with thousands of patients, things we've read, stories we've heard. If you think we're talking about you, we're not. Also, we're real nurses here to provide helpful and accurate information. But don't take anything we say as fact without doing your own research. Refer to your state's Board of Nursing, Practice Acts, and your institution's policies and procedures if you have questions about your practice. Lastly, our very strong opinions are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers, educational, or professional institutions. Thanks for listening, and happy nursing, folks!